When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company.
Like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR. Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, redballoon.work.
Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here, and you are listening to Open Mic with me, Michael Thiessen. This show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with ChristianWeek.org. Liberty Coalition Canada exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness and to defend those in Canada to stand. ChristianWeek.org exists to provide a practical, balanced, hope-filled perspective on national and global issues. This show is a ministry also of my local church, Royal Spring Chapel. So if you want to help support our podcasting work, head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click the analysis box. Donations submitted there go directly to christianweek.org. And if you want to support our legal and advocacy work, please head over to the same website, libertycoalitioncanada.com, and hit donate on other designations. And that will allow you to choose one of the cases that we are currently working on. The past couple of years have been some of the most uncertain times for employment and business in Canadian history. Have you ever considered owning a business where you can be passionate about your work and make a good living by helping others? Which, by the way, James and I both have done in the last 3 years, and James on the show today. Well, ProFleet Care is a franchise organization that is dedicated to helping people find financial freedom and take control of their own livelihood through good workmanship and honest business practices. So with a 40-year proven business model, ProFleet Care is a unique and comparatively low startup cost business in the margin in the growing rust protection industry. Yeah, my wife's truck needs some rust protection. So folks, if you're interested in joining ProFleet Care's franchise organization, go to profleetcare.com or call Greg Lowry at 905-741-5316. And just before we get into the show today with our lawyer, Chief Litigator James Kitchen, let me also just let you know that if you're using modern CRMs like MailChimp, HubSpot, or Salesforce for your email marketing, you'll probably notice or have noticed that they are canceling some voices that are speaking up for freedom and truth. So that's why Liberty Coalition Canada has switched to Sales Nexus. Sales Nexus is a complete business marketing and sales solution that won't tell you what you should say or believe. Try it yourself at salesnexus.com and get two users for the price of one with the promo code Liberty. So I know folks, many of you who are listening, run some form of marketing. We encourage you to check out Sales Nexus. Well, welcome to the show, my good friend James Kitchen. It is great to have you with me. And today we are going to be giving another legal update, as we tend to do once a month. But today is a celebration day. And so, James, why don't you tell us about our victory with the Juan Porter case?
Sure. Okay, so Juan Porter, this is a case that we took on now over 2 years ago, I believe, because we're now into the middle of 2024. And this was a COVID employment vaccine mandate case. There was a ton of those across the country, which was sad that so many people lost their jobs and had to suffer that kind of mistreatment. I had a number of clients who went through that they were hurt and they felt like they were, you know, second-class citizens. It was tough for them emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, and obviously financially and legally, right? They'd had their rights violated and their income taken away. And that was certainly Juan Porter. You know, and I heard from another number of people, whether it's because they were a little older, 40s and 50s, or because they're immigrants. They told me, you know, I just can't believe this country's like this. I can't believe, you know, I came here for something different. I was told it was something different. I experienced something different 20 years ago. It's really sad and distressing what this country has become. I heard that a lot. I'm sure some people can relate to that. And that's what happened here. We launched a lawsuit in the Ontario court system. So, you know, this is called a statement of claim, right? So if you get fired from your job, like Juan Porter did, for not taking the shot, you file a statement of claim, and then it triggers all these things that happen, right? And eventually what happens is you end up at trial in front of the court if you know, it's not resolved out of court. Well, so the victory for us this time is that we have resolved this out of court. Now, I'm going to have to tell you up front, there's a lot of details people are going to want to hear that I can't give you, because when you resolve things out of court, part of that process is that you are tight-lipped about all kinds of juicy details. Like, for example, did you get any money? How much money? Was there any other terms? Was there an apology? You know, all those things everybody wants to know, you can't know. I can't tell you, unfortunately. I can tell you some interesting things. I can't tell you those things. That's what everybody really wants to know. Sometimes you'll notice, if you read American news, you'll notice sometimes big settlements in the U.S., those numbers are publicly known. They go to the court, they're court approved, they're public, they're publicly known, and everybody talks about it. You know, oh, the hospital paid $10.3 billion to, you know, the 48 nurses that were kicked out because they didn't take the shot, whatever. I've read those things, I've seen those things. This isn't going to be like that, unfortunately, okay? So, but we have resolved the case, and as you can probably infer from that, you know, that does not involve Juan Porter just throwing up our hands, abandoning the case, and walking away. That's not what that involves. I can't tell you to what benefit she came to, but I think you can infer from that that there was something good. There, you know, part of the agreement in this case is because, of course, you know, it's interesting. I do a lot of this public stuff, right? So one of the things that always comes up is, and I'll tell you this. So this is funny. I'm in the. Let's back up. In order to get this resolution, okay, and I'm using that word because I have to use that word. You have to, you know, we went to something called mediation. Now, in some areas in the country, whether or not this is good or bad, there's court. Yeah, go ahead.
How many times did you go to mediation?
Just once.
Okay.
Now,
is mediation, did that happen after there was a time of discovery that I thought that you had brought up previously, or am I getting confused about the situation?
So yes, we had discovery first. You don't have to do that necessarily before you go to mediation. Okay. But in this case we did. So we filed our statement of claim, right? Like I said, and usually the next stage in that is discovery. Let me just tell you briefly what that is. So at least in this case, it was virtual. It can take place in person. We're all in a big boardroom, right? Me, Juan Porter, the client, the lawyers on the other side. I say lawyers because there's typically an army of them, and their client or clients. And there's a court reporter or transcriptionist, whatever you want to call them. It's just some lady with a special machine, and she takes a recording of everything, and then she produces a transcript for us to have later. And that's it. That's all that's in the room. There's no judge or there's no referee, so the lawyers can get, you know, they can get pretty pushy with each other. So we had discovery in this case virtually. You know, I'm based in Alberta. Juan Porter's in Ontario. It's just a waste of money, and there's no need for me to go over there. So we do it virtually. I do most of my discoveries virtually now. So we had our discovery. And so what that means is that the other side asks a bunch of questions to Juan to try to test her to see if she's lying or if she's going to fall to pieces or to figure out if my case is really, you know, total garbage. And I do the same thing to them. Okay. Now, in this case, who we sued was a hospital. It was North York General Hospital in the Toronto area. And so it's not a person, right? So the hospital just puts a front person up. right? We call it the corporate representative, and that's who I get to question. In this case, it was the PR person, or sorry, the HR person, the human rights person who, human resources person who violated Juan's human rights by denying her her religious exemption. So, so that's the person I got to question. I had a lot of fun at discoveries. I find it very interesting. I'm very comfortable with it. I make up my questions usually on the fly, which is a style that is difficult to adopt. Most lawyers don't do that. Some do, and they're always interesting to watch. I've seen a few do it who are really good at it. I'm sort of inclined to do that. And so in this case, a couple interesting things about discovery that I found. So, and we talked about this before, but this is worth mentioning. So this HR person, I'm asking her about all about why and how she denied Juan's religious exemption. Because, I mean, if the law had been followed by the hospital in this case, accommodation would have been granted. And just so you know, when it comes to human rights, you trigger the duty to accommodate, it's called, and then you get accommodation. It means you keep your job and you're able to keep working there, right? So even if you're Christian or whatever, Jewish, whatever, you got a Sabbath, you know, you don't have to work on the Sabbath. It's okay. You're accommodated, right? if you're physically disabled because you got your finger cut off, you're still able to work with some, you know, assistance, whatever, right? That's how this is supposed to work. And so I'm asking the woman, you know, like, why did you deny this? And we get a little bit down a rabbit trail, and it eventually comes out that the hospitals had a list. They had a little chart. Okay, they had a little chart, checkmark chart. Okay, and it had a list of religions on it. And it had a list of religions that allow vaccination and religions that don't. Now, I don't actually even know if there were any religions in the religions that don't allow it category. All I know is that there was a whole bunch of religions in the category, the made up category of religions that allow vaccination. And Christianity was on that list. Okay. And so literally what this woman did is she ignored what Juan said her beliefs were. She ignored what I said about the law and it comes to accommodating beliefs. She ignored all of that. She went to her little checkmark list. We don't know where it came from or who produced it, but there's this little checkmark list that apparently all the hospitals in the area used. you want to talk about arbitrary and ad hoc and not following the law, this little checklist. And she went down and, oh, well, Juan says she's a Christian and my little checklist says that Christians can take vaccination. Okay, deny. It's literally what the hospital did. Okay. this came out on Discovery.
Okay. And I want to pause you on that because folks, this is a story that I retell all the time, and sometimes I retell it and I go, I really hope I'm getting my facts straight on that one. Think about when James said arbitrary, this is somebody who has received a list from who knows. It could have been a secularist that developed the list by Google. It could have been, but this is somebody else attesting what the Christian faith says with the complete ignorance and ignorance of, you got to remember, President of Liberty Coalition Canada, Pastor Michael Thiessen, Christian lawyer James Kitchen, we're writing religious exemptions for people all over the place with scripture, history, with just what we would say Christian-based truthful rule of law appeals, like just the basic concept of medical informed consent that any Canadian is free to deny a treatment if they don't believe it's medically good for them. Like, all that falls within our Christian foundations. So it's like they couldn't have ignored the law more, and they could not have ignored your actual voice more. Like that would be like a parent sending your kids to daycare and your kids coming home and they sat in the lap of a transgender sex show drag queen for the afternoon, and the parents saying, I'm suing you for putting my child in physical harm's way, and the defense of the daycare being, oh, like the drag queen on the way in handed us a list of all the approved parents slash religions that just allow for the grooming of children, and your name was on it and your religion's on it. And the people going, no, it wasn't. And them saying, yes, it was. Like, that's how insane that is. So I wanted to pause on that one. These are the details. This is what a Christian woman had to endure, that the hospital went to a little checklist and completely ignored her. And this is what happened during the pandemic. Okay. I'm glad that you shared that. Like, that's what you discovered in discovery. Okay. What else did you discover in discovery?
Yeah. And just so you know, in my experience, what that woman related on discovery was not a one-off. This happened all across the country on a large scale. I'm seeing it a little bit in my cases, but I can tell you right now, if I see it a few times in my cases, that's the tip of the iceberg. It's happening all over the place, which is awful.
Especially in places where nobody said anything. Like meaning if they haven't fought back, how'd you find out about it? Yeah, it's happening everywhere.
I know. Yeah. See, this is part of the reason why it's so important to fight. Yeah. Okay, so that was part of my fun with discovering the hospital. But then, of course, now Juan Porter has to be discovered. Well, naturally, as I would expect the lawyer to do, especially since the type of defense they're trying to put up, they're trying to figure out if they can poke any holes in her story about her being supposedly a Christian that can't take the shot. And so we get into that, right? And the lawyer's asking questions about, well, why'd you do this? And why'd you do that? And why didn't you seek advice about the shot? And why didn't you go talk to this medical person and whatever, right? And so now one, I mean, she's a deeply Christian person, okay? And, you know, people have it in their minds that us Christians, you know, we're only Christians on Sunday mornings or with certain, you know, theological things we got, and that's it. But of course, one, with everything she does in her life, right? I mean, I don't mean putting on her socks in the morning, but you know what I mean? Like, with everything important in her life, she seeks the Lord's guidance. She looks to scripture. She prays about it, whatever, right? She tries to listen to the Holy Spirit, right? What we're supposed to do as Christians, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, Juan is one of those people that as a pastor, I go, that's a real Christian. Like,
yeah.
Like, one day as a pastor, I'd like to be that real of a Christian. Like, every once in a while you just bump into people where you go, I'm a Christian, but that person loves Jesus. And I'm sure you've had that experience where you're representing them. And okay, so yes. So Juan is very sincere and they're now poking holes at her. Continue.
Right. And they want to present her as not being sincere, right? Because that's for their argument. So Juan gets out the Bible. And she starts reading from the Bible in order to answer this question. And the question was something around, you know, like, who did you consult about deciding whether or not to take the shot? And, you know, why didn't you go consult the doctors and whatever? And Juan had a religious, she had a spiritual answer to that, just naturally, right? None of these questions are pre-planned. She doesn't know what's coming, right? But she hears that question and she thinks, well, I know what I'm going to say. It's because I sought the Lord's will. So she gets out the Bible and she starts reading from the Bible. And she gets like, you know, five words into reading the Bible, and the lawyer for the hospital loses it that this is happening. And she says, you know, you can't do this. And this is inappropriate. And you're trying to avoid my question and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, look, this whole case is about Christian religious discrimination. It should surprise no one that the plaintiff, who is the Christian that's been discriminated against, is giving you a religious answer about why she did something. And as part of that, she's reading from the Bible. I mean, that's like kind of to be expected. That shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, obviously you can feign surprise, which I think is what the lawyer was doing, but she, go ahead.
I want to jump in there actually. And everybody, as you're listening to that actually, okay. Like, again, the irony is ridiculous. You said it's to be expected, but look at folks. Most Christians don't even do that, in the sense that when they're pushed up against the wall, they get nervous about pulling out the Bible and quoting the Bible. We're supposed to be living by the authority and sufficiency of God's word for everything. Why'd you spank your kids? Well, spare the rod, spoil the child. Why did you stop spanking your kids when they were a certain age? Fathers, don't exasperate your children. Why are you married for 26 years? Because for the, when God joins them together, let no man separate them. Like this is the only thing we Christians are supposed to be doing. And the reason why I'm making this point, everybody, is you should be being like Juan Porter. Part of the problem of the division of the church during this time was Christians would not simply open up their Bibles. Oh, you want to look at sanitation laws? Let's just open up Leviticus 13 and 14. That's literally what we would have done if we were walking by faith. So Juan is technically, like, by all technical Christian religious value, doing the exact thing she should do. Right?
Yes, like, absolutely.
You might get pushed up against the wall and someone's like, well, why do you do that? Well, I looked and I believe in medical consent and the Bible says, the truth will set you free. So yeah, I still can't do it without quoting the Bible. How can you do anything without quoting the Bible, James, as a Christian?
Well, you can try. It's not going to be as effective and it might not be actually correct or accurate. So
Juan's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. Go ahead.
So there's some heated exchange between the lawyer and I. She's really upset. And
do you laugh at moments like that? Like, I would have a hard time
I try to keep a bit of a poker face. Okay, if you've ever seen me in court, and probably few people have, but there's, we have virtual court and you can sometimes see me like I have been this week. I try to keep a poker face most of the time. Okay. So I am keeping a poker face a lot of the time, but I'm also very human. I'm much less robotic than most lawyers. I'm much more human and normal and engaging. And I actually try to be, because I think that's good to do that. And so when these moments come up, I sometimes chuckle, and I sometimes say things that are, not polite society things to say, and other lawyers don't know what to do with me. And this was one of those scenarios, right? And so this lawyer got really upset and she made a big deal out of this and a big show of force and said, well, if you are not going to tell your client to stop reading from the Bible, then we're going to shut down this discovery. I'm going to take you to court and I'm going to get an order that you can't do that. And I'm just like, go for it. Bring it on. And she does. So you got to remember, okay, so I'm little dinky lawyer on my own. Okay. I'm up against these great big national firms, Hicks, Morley, and whatever, right? It's always the same big, huge players, $700 an hour lawyers, and they got a team of three of them on it. And it's always the same thing, right? And there are other people that do what I do, but they struggle with it. Of course, anybody would. And so these big, tough $700 an hour lawyers who are hired by these corporations with limitless resources, they really push their weight around, right? And that is very effective and it works most of the time.
Yeah, I wanted you to comment on that because number one, it's humorous because of what you're going to tell about how it was resolved. And so we can laugh about it. We'd be crying about it. We'd be crying with Juan, literally. We would be feeling emotionally distraught if things didn't turn out the way that they are. So you're going to share that. But this is one of their strategies, right? We're going to go take you to court. Well, that's more money that Liberty Coalition Canada has to raise to keep you going to fight the new thing that they're doing. Like, it is a strategy for them. You and I actually thank the Lord for our donors who came in this January and this spring, because like we had a few talks saying they're trying to collapse us. So, okay, keep going. So they're trying to push you around and they say, we're going to go to court.
Yeah. And one of the interesting and fun parts of a lawyer is you're always trying to know, okay, is this threat real? And even if it is real, is it something that I get all fine then, take me to court? And you don't, because you can overuse that. And then you end up in court when you shouldn't and you're going to lose. And there's a bunch of costs and there's a bunch of expenses. And then you just, like all I did was play macho man to the detriment of my client and everybody's donations. So I have to be careful not to do that. So it's challenging, but I find it fun and interesting to say, is this threat real? Are these people bluffing? Because most of the time they are.
I think you find it interesting because you're competent. I appreciate that about you. That's why you find it interesting. Everybody, just by the way, you can navigate so many things in life and know whether people are lying to you if you just know the law and you're competent in your craft. So that I can understand why it would be kind of enjoyable for you, because you're able to quickly do a sniff test.
So, you know, and there's all this psychology between the lawyers. I get up against these lawyers and I'm like, I think you're full of it. I don't think, you know. So, you know, lawyers are very good at blustering, and they can make it look seem really real, right? So this woman was very blustery about, you know, we're going to take it to court and we're going to win on this. So I'm like, you know, fine. And she's like, all right, well, we're ending discovery because, you know, if you're not going to tell your client not to refund the buy-well, and I'm not going to continue with discovery. Like, all right, well, that's too bad, but go ahead. So we end discovery and I get this letter from the lawyer. And by the way, these letters are on Liberty Coalition Canada website. You can read them. I think it is interesting. They're not super long. It's interesting. It's a window into how lawyers, you know, stare each other down. So she's like, I'm going to take you to court over this. And I was like, have at her. Take us to court. But just so you know, I really don't think we need to. I think you have overreacted to this. You know, why don't we try it again? You cool off and we try it again. And, you know, Juan's not going to sit there like a robot and read you the entire book of Isaiah and answer to every question. She's just going to read a few verses to help explain her beliefs and her reasoning, which you're asking about. And it's discovery, so you should want to discover that. And so then I get another letter, and this letter is a little less blustery. It's a little more like, well, you know, maybe we won't take you to court, but, you know, I'm still concerned about your client reading from the Bible. And I think you need to agree that she can only read the Bible at the end of her question, at the end of her answers or something like that, right? And I'm like, look, no, I'm not going to agree to any of your stupid conditions, okay? You either get off your high horse or go to court. So then we get another letter back saying, fine, Mr. Kitchen, fine. We'll go back in discovery and your client can read from the Bible, but we reserve our right to go to court if it doesn't go very well, right? And so I'm like, fine, well, just go back into discovery then. So we go back into discovery, we do it, you know, Juan gives her all of her beliefs and whatever, and, you know, paraphrases from the Bible and stuff, and then we're good, we're done, right? And, you know, we didn't have to go to court, and all of that was just a big show. It was just a big bluster. It was just a big, you know, to their side, it wasn't like a stupid strategic move for their side. They're testing, right? They're trying to see, is Mr. Kitchen, you know, as tough as he puts on? You know, is it, do they really, are they scared of spending the money? And do these people really, you know, are these serious people? And are we really going to have to, you know, defend a trial or settle on this? Or can we just pound these people into the ground because they're weak and pathetic? It's a good strategy. They're testing me, right? And you have to recognize that as a lawyer, especially when you're the underdog guy like me, okay? You have to be aware of all that.
I want to make two points on that, because this is something, as we're teaching people how to engage culture and to stand, we literally say that Liberty Coalition exists to defend those who stand. Well, one of the ways that we defend those who stand is by equipping them to stand. You have to hear that, everybody. When you say it's a good strategy, number one, the word good, you don't mean it is a holy, righteous, virtuous strategy. In fact, it shows more, again, this is the second stroke of ignorance. First stroke is, oh, I'm not going to listen to you at all. It's going to look at a little checklist that my Baha'i friend gave me, who happens to be taupe, you know, who happens to be a pharmacy rep for Pfizer. There's a Pfizer label up at the top of this thing about which really, like, we don't know where that list came from. So we're going to just completely ignore. And then strike number two.
For that list, by the way, and we went to mediation before we did undertakings on discovery, so I never got a copy of that list, but I would have got a copy of it if we had gone to trial.
Right. Okay. So then you have the second part where we're, you know, I might be wrong on this, but I'm like literally thinking about communist Romania, where it's like, no, you can't read from the Bible in order, like, that's the second tick of pure violation. That's what I want to get at. Folks, they will violate you. Now, what James is getting at, and he's helping you train, the reason why they will violate you is because they have a tactic to minimize you. They have a tactic to actually violate you. They're going to violate you to violate you. That's the way these things often operate when you're dealing with people who are violating you. So when James says it's good, he simply means they are pushing and testing to see how far they can go. He does not mean good in the sense of virtuous and respectful of the law. You gotta strengthen up for that. People do this to you all the time. This is why the Lord says, blessed are you, when people say all kinds of false things about you, like you can't read scripture. So, and folks, I know James and I have been over this before, but as we're giving a celebration to the end of this file, we want to walk you all the way through what Juan has gone through and what James has gone through. Okay, so we're at discovery. Do you have anything more to tell us about discovery, or are we going to now just move into the mediation meeting?
No, I would say that ended well, and that was good, and I was glad we went through that process and we stood up to that threat to take us to court to not read the Bible. So next step. So normally there's a bunch of undertakings you ask for at discovery. So for example, like I just said, I asked for that little cheat sheet. That would have been awesome to have that. And so that responses to undertakings can take months because there's all this stuff that you ask for. There's a whole bunch of work to get it all together. So they asked Juan for a bunch of stuff. I asked the hospital for a bunch of stuff. The stuff we had to give up really wouldn't have really undermined our case. I suspect some of the stuff they had to give up would have undermined theirs. But
can
I never
you
got to see
if
it.
That little list had a Pfizer label on it, like I did.
I'm sure that would be redacted, but
yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would be. Why would that be? Okay, go ahead.
So this case was in the Toronto region of Ontario. Some court regions across the country have mandatory court imposed mediation, which is the whole idea by that is to have more cases get resolved out of court so that they don't end up in court because the court's backlogged. It takes like 4 years to get a trial date. That was what's going on here. So we had court mandated mediation. So that means the parties have to find some mediator. We found some old experienced guy's been doing this for like 30, 40 years. And we meet on a Zoom thing like this. Now the parties are never in the same room. They're not arguing with each other. The mediator literally is a mediator. So, he meets with one side, then he goes and meets with the other side and he comes back and he's going, imagine it physically. It's like we're in two different rooms and he's walking back and forth, but it's just virtual.
Which actually happens quite normally when you're talking about like labor union disputes and things like that, where like they're literally bunkered into a hotel with a bunch of rooms here and the mediator is physically walking back and forth to the rooms. Okay. So
that's what this guy has been doing for 40 years. So, so we go in there and, you know, mediator's a typical guy, right? He's a little bit skeptical of our position. He's a little bit like, oh, you know, you guys, you got this weird case, you weird people not taking the shot. And, you know, he's not saying those words, but I mean, he's communicating that. I expect that. Right. And he gives us kind of a hard time about some positions. And I go back at him. Well, I think you're wrong about this. And it's back and forth. And then it's the whole idea. He's trying to get both sides to, he's trying to poke holes in each side to get them together. Right. So, so he goes back over. And, yeah. I don't know. It's funny. Cause I warned Juan what this is going to be like. Okay. And it went exactly that way. Because normal people have a hard time with all this pressure, right? This is why normal people don't become lawyers, okay? They do normal things like what Juan does. She works in a hospital to help babies, you know? So they don't like the pressure. I love the pressure. I just think it's great. But so he did through this mediation. It lasted about 3 or 4 hours. He put a lot of pressure on Juan to settle. And I warned her for that. And, you'd be okay and just let me shield you, right? So so sure enough, he goes over to the hospital. The hospital makes an offer and, you know, and it goes back and forth. Like, I can't really give you a whole lot of details about that. But that's how it goes. It goes back and forth, right? And it's really tense and kind of scary. And I love it, but most of my clients really hate it, I've learned. So just because it's just so tense, right? And So then at one point he comes back and he's like, so the other side just told me that this case is on like a website or something and, you know, something to do with Liberty Canada, something like that. And, you know, they're really worried about that because, you know, whatever, all this, you know, publicity, and you guys saying stuff you shouldn't and whatever.
Why is it that nobody can remember Liberty Coalition Canada? I swear, like, we've been in 5 or 6 newspapers in the last 2 years where they, it's like Liberty Canada, Liberty Coalition. Again, folks, that's intentional, but hey, wonderful that, praise the Lord, maybe some of those people read our Christian convictions on our website and might come to Christ because of reading Juan's story. Okay, all right, but go ahead.
Anyway, so I was like, you know, it is what it is. We're not, you know, we're here to be serious. We're here to have a serious court case. Yes, I talk about it publicly. I know that's unusual in Canada. It's a much more American thing, but I'm not just some goofball or gory hound. Like, you know, I'm here to do the serious work. And yeah, I do talk about it publicly because I think that's important, but I'm here to do the serious work. And we sorted through that issue. But one of the reasons I bring that up is I, you know, what I do is unusual. The fact that I publicize my cases so much, that is very unusual in Canada. It's a very American thing. And these Canadian lawyers I'm up against, they just have no idea what to do with that. Right? They're scared of it. They're uncomfortable with it. They don't know how to handle it. It's like this, it's like a hedgehog that's got its spikes up and it's prickly and they don't know, you know, and I don't know how to hold it. So they don't know what to do with me. I found this in Josh Alexander case. The big firm, I think it's the same firm, Hicks Morley, big firm out east. And they kept telling me, well, you can't talk about that. And I'm like, okay, if I can't talk about it, take me to court and show me how I can't talk about it. You know, and so they dropped that after a while, right? After the while, they just like, well, okay, he's not going to listen to us and we got nothing, you know.
They're so used to people wanting things to just go away. That's, yeah. They are just so used to people saying, make this go away. I don't want any public backlash, me or you, that they just say that. And it's not true at all. Okay. All right.
Eventually a resolution is reached and, you know, it's an agreement. And, you know, the part of the agreement is that I'm to say it's resolved and that's it. That's all I can say. And that's just how it goes. And, you know, it's tough, right? Because there's a part of me that says, oh, I just want to take this to trial. You know, I'm going to fight. I think I can win this, or at least I would win if I had a judge who was fair. And, you know, I just, and, you know, so, and the reason I say that is I want people to know, like, it's important when you do this type of work, right? This is a very difficult, I don't say this to toot my own horn. It is difficult to do what I do. It is wearisome to do what I do. It would be so much easier to just hang up the cape and go off into the night and make oodles of money and go buy my yacht and leave you all people all alone. And just get what I can before I return in dust to the earth. I'm telling you right now, it'd be a lot easier to do that. And I feel that.
And it, part of the reason why it would be a lot easier to do that is because when you have a victory and it's not in court, then it's off the public docket. And so the very people you're defending and representing, you're saying, hey, we did it. And all of the people who poured their money into this case and said, we want to stand with Juan, we want to stand with this Christian, are going, is she doing okay? Like, how do we do? So everybody, we're just going to smile because that is what, you know, I'm so appreciative of all of your work, James, on this. So keep sticking at it. And I know the reason why you're talking about this last section is because if you had gone to trial, you could make things more public. Because again, that's one of the things that's an important key component about this is all of these things are happening behind closed doors very often. So people do not see the corruption and the pressure for what it is. And so they just think the Canadian legal climate is great. And if this ever happened to me, I'd get a fair shake. And it's hard when it doesn't go to trial for you because you can't speak about it as openly as you would like to. So, okay. Wrap this up for us because I know you want to talk. I know you also want to talk about Dr. Curtis Wall. So is there any other information you want to share?
I mentioned that is it was good for Juan to resolve this. Right. And, you know, as a lawyer, I have an ethical obligation to my client. Right. And I have, like an on paper ethical obligation. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I have an ethical obligation, or a spiritual obligation to God. I have an ethical obligation to the public, both financially in the sense that some people donate to support these cases, which goes to me to pay the legal fees, but also broader than that in the sense that, like, I have taken on this role of trying to be a public defender and a public informer and a public exposer. And so I'm balancing all these things. And anyways, in this case, it came out that even though it might've been nice for my ego, to take this to trial, that's not where it was going. And so it was resolved. Juan agreed to that resolution. And, so it's an end of the case. And, that's in my view, it's a good thing. That's what I want people to hear, that it's a good thing. Because not all cases are going to end in a good way by going to court and winning or losing. Because, you know, these resolutions have a positive impact. Not a very public one or a precedent-setting one technically, but they have an impact, right? I want people to see what happened here. This hospital was held accountable legally. It never would have been if somebody like me didn't come along to do it, and if all the wonderful people who donated didn't sacrifice to give those donations to make it happen. This accountability has a lot of value. One that's intangible, it's not necessarily on paper, but it's felt. One, this case was public, so people actually heard about it from me. but, you know, I mean, things get talked about in the world, right? Behind doors. And I think it matters. Right now, a lot of places got away with a lot of mistreatment of people because there was no legal accountability, there was no cases, there was no whatever. But there were a few, and this was one of them. And I think that's really good. I think there is an impact, and I think the donations that people gave resulted in something, that they can be happy about, even though Absolutely. We didn't go to court and get away.
Absolutely,
Absolutely.
Everybody. I just want to close our time here talking about Juan. So number one, Juan, we celebrate you. We're so glad that you took this stand. We're so thankful that you have been able to resolve this. We thank you for your Christian example of using your Bible in the middle of a discovery and using your Bible throughout this entire thing. So thank you, Juan, for your stand. And it was our privilege to stand beside you, and we continue to support you, and we're thankful for you. I do want to say, James, that as you were talking about there, this is how the, I don't want to get too out of the details. I want to go back to Dr. Curtis Wall and stay in the details, but people will be able to go to our website and read about this case. And I'm sure you're going to put a legal update to finish off the case in the file, but you're going to be able to research about this. You're going to be able to be informed about this. And this is not some abstract thing, you know, in the name of, like, even this week, James, what I'm trying to get to is this. Even this week, we spent some time, somebody visited us, and they had some family who visited us, and there was a doctor in that family. Doctor wouldn't come to church because it was my church, slash not that interested in Christianity. And the family again had to go through, no, like, this was a pandemic and the government was brilliant. So, folks, if there is no actual law to protect your individual liberty, the tendency is for anybody inside the government apparatus to still justify whatever they've done, which means that when the next thing comes along, or the next, and I you know, James, this program continues to remind me of Communist Romania, just because I've read a few of the lawyers, Christian lawyers, who did work there. Like, there will be a mob who say, just do as you're told. Like, it's just so historically relevant, or so historically consistent. And so everybody, like, you know, this doctor went to say, like, look, everybody got along except for those rowdy Christians who just, you know, are anti-science and anti, and I was so frustrated that and so embarrassed that Christians were the one who were doing it. And it's like, no, Christians were actually reminding you of the beautiful law, the beautiful legal climate that has been developed in this country that is being ignored. So just remember that. Like, if people give you that, throw that stone at you and say, you're just being petty or you're just, the response is no, law is good. Law defends us from just Pfizer putting out a list that says these are the religions that can't be in bags. Like, again, I speculate it, that list might not have had Pfizer labeled on it, but that's how corrupt things can get. And so, James, of course, this is important work. So let's move over now and let's talk about Dr. Curtis Wall. This was our first case that we took on together as Liberty Coalition Canada, with you being our chief litigator. And this is a case that you have – sometimes we've done it as a publicly LCC case, and then sometimes you've taken on some extra work on the side on behalf of Dr. Walls with your practice. We're back now making sure everybody is aware of what's happening. So let's go through what's happening. We've got 15 minutes to give an update on Dr. Curtis Walls.
Okay, so I'll be a little quicker on this one. So long case, there's a lot to it. Long description on the Liberty Coalition Canada website. Just the highlights of this. He doesn't wear a mask in 2020. So this is, you know, early COVID, pre-vaccine era. Masks were all the rage. It takes a while, but finally, after a while, he tries to wear it. He can't, he's not able, he's medically unable to wear it. So he doesn't wear it. He lets the patients that he has who doesn't want to wear it because they can't wear it because it's, you know, objectively bad for them. We all know that it deprives your brain of oxygen and gives you toxic levels of carbon dioxide and microplastics. It's terrible. We all know that now, at least if we don't have our head in the sand. So this happens. The college finds out. There's a complaint, of course, to Alberta Health Services. They complain to the college. The college lights their hair on fire. They find out on December 3rd of 2020, and by December 4th, they are putting in place the machinations to take his license away on an emergent basis, which is what you do when people literally, when they rape patients and like steal money from patients and like show up to work drunk. Like that's what you do it for. So Dr. Wall hires me. I defend on that. The college is unsuccessful. They're not able to take his license away. Now, it should have ended there, but they decided to go on a crusade, okay? So they launch their huge case against Dr. Wall. Now, this is December 2020, and we are April 2024, okay? So this is how long this has been going on.
And folks, just can you imagine having – I can imagine having legal cases hang over your head for 3 years. Can you imagine? Like, this is very stressful to a family. And it's connected to his livelihood. Where mine were never connected to my livelihood in that type of way.
Wait, this is all he does. I mean, he has nothing else that he can make decent money at. Of course, he's dedicated his whole life to being a very good chiropractor. And let me tell you, he is a very good chiropractor. Okay?
And he's a Christian man in BC, so he can't like just go sell drugs. Like he's actually, you know, has some morals and ethics, which we...
Boy, does he? Does he have morals and ethics? Anyway,
again, so yeah, I don't mention that to be flippant. Here in the province, where they've had a major drug epidemic, overdose. Here, they're removing. They're trying to remove a practitioner's license over masking, while they themselves, the same type of bodies, not the exact body, but the same type of bodies are. Killing people by legalizing drugs. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and abortion too, of course, which kills people. So that's right. A whole other story. So we go through this ordeal. I have four experts involved. They have one. My four experts trounce their one. Big, long hearing. And then the tribunal is hopelessly pro-COVID. Hopelessly just already, you know, it made up their mind. It's just whatever the college says, whatever the authorities say about COVID. And so they ignore all the expert evidence and rule against him. Fine. That's January 2023. Okay. Now here's where it gets a little interesting. Okay. Well, and sorry, in the process of all of that, the complaints director for the college, you know, was really, I think, abusing his authority and his power and was threatening Dr. Wall with costs and all that sort of stuff. And I made a point of pointing that out. I said it was prosecutorial misconduct. And in response to that, he retired. And you can see that on the website. That was very interesting to see. That's just goes to show that that's the type of advocacy you have to bring to this. You can't come in and do this stuff timidly, and you can't be a blustering fool either. And so I make sure I don't do that, but I have to come in and be very bold, very aggressive, and I have to go on the offensive because I think a lot of times the best defense is a good offense. So I was defending Dr. Wall on this, but this complaints director, who's the prosecutor for the college, he was just pushing and pushing and pushing. And then finally he pushed too far. And I said, you've stepped over the line. This is misconduct. You got to get off the file. And I said that, and he retired in response to it, which whatever. But that's I think is an interesting story. You can read about it on the website. And again, not to toot my own horn, but that's how I think this is supposed to be done. You come in and you say, no, you guys have been running roughshod of everybody because you don't think they have any money and you have all the statutory power. And these are just a bunch of little people you can crush. Not in this case. Right. So that happens. We get the finding that Dr. Wall is a bad boy because he didn't wear masks. And then we have to go to sentencing, which if you know anything about criminal law, right? Okay. If you punch the guy and get convicted of assault, that's one thing, but then you got to find out how long do you go to jail for it. And that's a whole other process, the sentencing process. So we did that in 2023. Now in July 31st, 2023, all of the public health orders in Alberta were struck down retroactively, all of them for all time ever to do with COVID. So anything from March 2020 onwards, all the masking orders, all the lockdown orders, blah, 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 all struck down. That case was not appealed. That is binding standing law in Alberta. July 31st, 2023. Yes.
Okay. So number one, whether that was done politically to just get the province out of having to deal with all of this, to save face, whatever.
If it was political, the political part came in at the choice of the government not to appeal it to the Court of Appeal. If there was any politics, that's right. Where I'll say it would be.
So, and then if it's, and then even if it was just legally framed, that would be an admission of guilt and an admission of previous wrongs. But either way, just repeat that again. Where and when did that happen? And it is the standing law.
Binding law in Alberta.
Did I make a BC reference? I thought that Dr. Walls was in BC.
He's in Alberta, but your BC reference is a good one because the drug issue there is. It's wacko. It's wacko.
Okay. For those of our Western listeners, please apologize for my Ontario, now Kentucky reference point where I know some of you Westerners are sensitive to that. Just so you know, James earlier said the word Toronto, and I found great offense in that because if you are from that area, it's called Toronto. So double of East West, double offense. Okay. No trigger warning here. Okay. All right. So in Alberta, all of those, they're retroactively
struck down.
Yeah. Struck.
So that means it's not just that they are invalid as of July 31st, 2023. They always were. Okay. That's what that means. So most or all, depending on how you look at it, but at least most of the charges of not wearing a mask, there was a bunch of charges associated with that against Dr. Wall, were based directly on those public health orders. Those charges, this is a matter of logic and of law, those charges cannot stand if the underlying law has been declared invalid. There is case law on this, okay? To give you an example of how this works, I was defending Church in the Vine in Edmonton. This is the church that didn't let the inspector in during Sunday morning worship. They were fined $80,000. I appealed it all the way up to the Court of Appeal. When this case came out, this case is called Ingram. When this case came out, the Crown prosecutors wrote to the Court of Appeal and said, we concede the appeal because the public health orders have been struck down. And the law says, and they cited some cases to support it, the law says that any fines, any charges that are based on a law that has been struck down must be invalidated, must be void if the underlying law itself has been invalidated by the courts. Okay? That $80,000 was returned to that church in Edmonton that were my clients because this Ingram case happened and these public health orders were struck down. That's July 31st. In August, okay, mid-August, 2 weeks later, over 2 weeks later, the tribunal says, in complete ignorance of this case, doesn't mention it once, okay, it's been out for 2 weeks now, they have a lawyer, they're paying that lawyer over $700 an hour, it's his job to both inform them that this case exists and to tell them, you're going to have to account for it, okay? They ignore it, and they say, Dr. Wall is going to have to pay $65,000 for what? For these charges of not wearing a mask, okay? They should not have done that. They should have said, Ingram has happened. The public health orders have been struck down. That means that our previous finding is not right because it was based on that. And so we're just going to put an end to this. Dr. Wall doesn't have to pay anything, or maybe he only has to pay a little bit for the couple charges that weren't based on it. That would have been reasonable too. Not that I would have agreed to it, but it would have at least been reasonable, okay? Instead, they ignored it, they barreled ahead, and they said, you have to do this. Now, that's one mistake, okay?
Can you repeat that, James, in the sense that they sent him a letter? So all of this has been struck down, and then now you've been sent a letter saying we're still
That's exactly where I was going. So, okay, just you know, this decision, and I'm pretty sure this is on the website as well, this decision said, Dr. Wall is to pay $65,000, and he has to make payments. We're not going to make him pay it all at once. Thank you. Cause I mean, a guy like this wouldn't be able to, he's got eight kids. He's got a wife and he supports them all. And his practice is not some huge booming practice. Okay. So this is a lot of money to him. He couldn't pay it all at once. It'd be impossible. So the tribunal that decides his case says he has to pay this. He has to pay it over time. He has to pay it in installments. But if he misses any installments, his license will be immediately revoked without any other process to make it happen. It would be an automatic thing. No payment, license gone. Okay, so you're like, this is like no payment, the house is gone, but like even worse. That's what Dr. Wall is facing because of this decision.
Is this just a matter, I want to say, I know it's not just a matter, but is this just a matter of a line of paperwork process? Like it's been bumped from one desk to another. Oh, we've got to communicate with that doctor over there and this issue we're doing here and this issue doing here. And oh yeah, we're dealing with this guy again. Okay, now this is the payment plan, like meaning that it's unreasonable that they've done it, but is it just a matter of like we're not keeping up with all of the changes in the law and you know when you get a visa bill and you've already paid it, so it's like a retroactive bill and it says if you've already like it is, or is this something that's coming again from a legal body that should know better?
They should know better. They have spent over $600,000 on this case. They have a lawyer that they're paying over $700 an hour for in Alberta, not Toronto, which is where lawyers are paid the most in the country. Okay, $700 an hour is normal in Toronto. It's not in Alberta. Okay. So yes, it is their job to know this stuff and to follow this stuff. Okay. They don't get to hide behind the fact that they're chiropractors because they spend oodles of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars hiring lawyers to handle this for them, like any health college does. A big part of their budget is on lawyers. they should know this. And so here's the thing. This happens. Fine. That's wrong. It's a mistake, right? But what should happen if... So... the laws are struck down in July 2023. In August 2023, the tribunal comes out and says, we don't care. Well, they implicitly, silently said, we don't care. We're going to ignore this and you still have to pay these fines, even though these fines are based on charges that are based on laws that have just been struck down. Okay? So, but the college has a prosecutor. That person's called the complaints director. That's that person's name. Okay? That person prosecutes professionals. That's their job. They're a prosecutor. Remember earlier I talked about how I said there was prosecutorial misconduct? And then that complaints director, who is the prosecutor, retired in the face of those allegations from me. Okay? Prosecutors have discretion. Now, what that means is they can make up their own mind about certain things. Now, they have obviously a lot of constraints, right? I mean, prosecutors, Crown prosecutors can't charge you for the offense of purple thumb. Okay. it has to be an actual criminal code offense. Okay. But you understand what I mean? It's not like they're just a bunch of people who can do whatever they want running around society with a club. They have rules, but they can decide, right? So for example, the criminal code says indictment or summary conviction. The Crown gets to choose, use their discretion to choose whether to charge at all, whether to prosecute at all, or if they do, to go with summary conviction or indictment. Okay. That's how our system works. If you think of the SNC-Lavalin affair, right, with Jody Wilson-Raybould, she has the discretion, or at least what she was arguing is, look, my prosecutors have the discretion, and I'm not going to interfere with that, because if I did, it'd be political interference. Okay, that's how our system works. This prosecutor has discretion. Remember I said earlier the Crown prosecutors wrote to the Court of Appeal in my Church in the Vine case and said, we are conceding the appeal, okay? There was no law that said they had to do that. There was no law saying they couldn't do that. That was their choice. Okay. That's what Crown prosecutors do. They try to make good ethical choices for society. And they actually do a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time they do. Okay. This is the complaints director is a prosecutor. She has, it's a new one, obviously, because the old one retired. It's a she. She has discretion to decide, what do I do with this? Okay. I have this thing I could choose to enforce, or I could choose not to, because the law, if I was to, you know, do the right thing, the law says I shouldn't enforce this because these laws that these charges, these fines are based on has been struck down. So instead what she does through her lawyer, there's lawyers involved in all of this. And so all the communications, none of this is between Dr. Wall or the college at all. It's all between the complaints director's lawyer and me as Dr. Wall's lawyer. Okay. All these communications. And so he comes to me and says, she has, this is interesting. She has decided she is going to enforce this order come September 1st. If Dr. Wall doesn't start paying, and if he doesn't start making his payments, she will invoke the tribunal's order and he will lose his license. So notice the fact that she's chosen to enforce on September 1st, which is an arbitrary deadline that she's chosen in her prosecutorial discretion. Okay. And then I say to him, look, I have to file an application now because this is wrong. I have to stop this. You know, you shouldn't be enforcing fines based on bunk laws that have been invalidated. And he says, well, you know, she doesn't have the discretion. I mean, she's bound by the legislation. She has to enforce what the tribunal says. And I'm like, no, she doesn't. Because she is a prosecutor and she has discretion and she can decide not to enforce fines based on laws that are unlawful like any other prosecutor does. And you just proved my point because you just told me that she's choosing September 1st to enforce.
Okay, James.
She could have chosen a later date. She could have chosen an earlier date. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, really quick on that. When you say prosecutor, I'm thinking of like the criminal court system or a provincial court system. So within the regulatory body, like the College of the Chiropractic College is a regulatory body. So it is somehow connected to the Alberta legal system. Like try to make that, try to explain that for me, how this is,
right.
How this someone, like I'm thinking law and order prosecutor, like, explain that relationship, how that works.
Right. So just like I said, right, they're like the Crown prosecutors to a lesser degree. Okay. They're not given as much discretion. Okay. But it's akin to it. That's how I want you to think of it. That's why I'm explaining that, right? Crown prosecutors work with the criminal code and all these other regulatory statutes, right, that they enforce. Same thing here. Here we have the Health Professions Act. The Health Professions Act. It's called the Regulated Health Professions Act in Ontario. In Alberta, it's the Health Professions Act. Okay, and that's what gives these colleges the authority to do this, right? To charge all these fees that the members have to pay every year, and then to, you know, prosecute all these cases and impose all these charges and take all the licenses away and impose all these fines. That's where the authority comes from. It's delegated from the legislature. Okay, that's how this works. And so she is, through the common law and through that legislation, she has delegated this authority, right, to charge chiropractors with unprofessional conduct, and then to convict them, and then to punish them when they are convicted, and to take their licenses if that's part of the conviction. Okay, that's, she's given that authority. So where we are at in his case is this, right? We have this this binding law in Alberta that has struck down all the public health orders. Most, if not all, of Dr. Wolf's charges are based on those public health orders, which means they're invalid, they're void, okay? He should not be paying any fines based on that, okay? That's obvious, all right? To anybody who, you know, cares about the law and isn't just trying to abuse their power or authority. It's obvious, right? And that's the problem here. As I've said to the college, you can't enforce this stuff. Right? Just like the Crown couldn't enforce, the Crown prosecutors couldn't enforce the $80,000 fines on the Church and the Vine in Edmonton because the public health orders have been shut down. You can't enforce this. It would be wrong to do so. Legally wrong. Obviously morally wrong too, but legally wrong. Okay? And the prosecutor has, or the complaints director has come to me and said through her lawyer, I have no choice. I don't have any discretion in this. It's what the tribunal said. They ordered this. So I have to enforce it. And I have no discretion to say otherwise. And so because of that, I've had to make this application to the Council of the College of Chiropractors, okay? And so the council, sort of like, you know, and I mentioned this before, sort of like the fox watching the henhouse scenario, they have to decide if they're going to disagree with the complaints director, who they all work together, okay? They're all part of the same team. So I don't have a whole lot of hopes on that, unfortunately. I just think this, and I don't, it's not necessarily their fault. The system is stupid. I don't know who designed this idea that foxes can watch henhouses and somehow that's good for our legal system. It drives me nuts that we have these sort of appeals to the inside body, right? If somebody's done something wrong, you don't go upstairs and be like, well, your buddy downstairs isn't doing the right thing. Can you please, you know, slap them upside the head and tell them they did the wrong thing? Yeah, right. Human nature. No, it's not going to happen. You're not going to throw your buddy under the bus, right?
Yeah, you're so funny, even the way you describe that. Your buddy downstairs is giving a problem. Can you do something about it? And we all know what's happening. The guy's going, yeah, we'll go out for a bottle of wine and some cheese. We'll talk it through. Maybe he'll hand me a 50. Maybe he'll pay for the bottle of wine and cheese. Like, yeah, internal affairs has to be external somehow, right? Like, investigate. So it continues.
This is all part of the mess of administrative law in Canada. So anyways, I've applied to counsel to make this happen. But it's really frustrating because it never should be this way, right? If the complaints director, who's the prosecutor of the college, would do her job according to what I think it should be done, okay? She disagrees with me, but if she would just do her job, she would say, okay, I've read Ingram, I'm going to follow the law, and I'm not going to enforce this, right? Instead, what she's done is she said to me, which I just think is a cop out. She said, well, I don't have any choice. I have to enforce this because this is what the tribunal has said. Which is just absurd at law. It's absurd. The court has said, no, these are struck down. And she's saying, well, because the tribunal decided to ignore that, I get to ignore that. Actually, I have to ignore that. And I'm going to enforce these fines against Dr. Wall. And I just think this is just, it's an abuse of power, right? These people have the power, right? Go back to the Juan Porter example. These people think that they can bleed Dr. Wall and I dry. They can drain all of our emotion and we will throw up our hands and we will give up and we will just say, you got me. Just run me through. I can't fight anymore. That's what they're hoping for, right? And that's what burns me, and it should burn everybody else. So, I have done a lot of work on this file for free, and this plays into this issue, right? So, but we're going ahead with this application. It's on the website. There's been an email blast about it. It's been covered in the media a little bit, so people can read the application that I've given to the council. They can write to the council and tell them their views on it. By the way, you can do that. It's a public body. And I would encourage you to. I think that's appropriate. That's accountable. That's accountability. That's democracy. I'm asking people to donate to support this case so that we can do it and we can do it right. And we can hold these people accountable and we can continue this case as long as we need to and show them that although they're already outspending us 6 or 7 to 1, they don't just get to spend their way out of this because they eventually just dry us up and we go away and we give up and whatever. They can just press their huge power advantage on us until they squish us. I want people to come in and continue to help Dr. Wall so that doesn't happen. We can continue this fight and we can eventually get this to the Court of Appeal of Alberta and we can win this.
So first of all, in our email blast, did we give people very specific instructions on how to reach out to this body?
No.
Okay.
So, I just mentioned that now.
So, folks, we're going to take on the responsibility. Now that James has mentioned that to me, we're going to take on the responsibility to try to give you something that you can quickly just click an email link and grab some good verbiage and get started on that. So that's one thing. And James, I'm glad you made us aware of that possibility, because that should be a no-brainer for us to be able to get
please,
a big campaign.
By all means,
to go.
If you're in Alberta and listening to this, talk to your chiropractor, right? Yeah. You might be dismayed to find out how ignorant, not because your chiropractor is an idiot, but you might be dismayed to find out how ignorant your chiropractor is and how upset they might be if they found out that their fees was going to pay $600,000 worth of legal fees over 4 years to persecute this chiropractor who didn't wear a mask. They might be dismayed to find that out, but they might not know about it. Why? Because that's just how bad censorship is in this country. And people need to start talking person to person to overcome that. If all 1,200 chiropractors in Alberta knew about this, most of them, I tend to think, would be upset, and they should be upset, and they would be saying something and should be saying something, and that would be part of that democratic accountability. There's such a dearth of democratic accountability that these people think they can get away with this, right? That's because legally they think they can get away with it because they think they could just use their advantage and pound us into the ground and outspend us. But and then they just think everybody will ignore this, and that's where I need people to help too. Yes, I need you to donate. I want you to donate, but please, dear Lord, talk about this. Okay, because that is the other side of how you take back our country from these tyrants, is you talk about it and you make it an issue and you hold them accountable.
Sorry. Yeah, and of course, in the name of the Lord, with the authority of your Christian moral fortitude, folks. So we're going to take on the responsibility to keep updating you on this and to get you some good contacts that you can get, reach out. We'd love for you to make those phone calls or send those emails. They do actually listen to these folks when they get exhausted with 30 pastors who just keep calling in. So, you know, friends in Alberta. And then secondly, you know, we're at another time where we've had a good season to get us through some of our other cases. And we are going to need some support on this. So if you would be willing to go to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click other designations and click the Dr. Curtis Wall case, we'd really appreciate it if you'd be willing to partner with us in that. James, this has been a great update. You've really brought us into the courtroom. You've brought us into the negotiating rooms. You've helped us kind of understand how these things happen. And I look forward to talking further next month about similar stuff. Everybody, we are just so privileged to be doing this work. We're thankful to the Lord that we're doing this work. And even though we are spread out all across North America in different settings and whatnot, we're still fighting for Canada. And so we appreciate you, and we appreciate you listening. For everybody that is on the Liberty, I'm just thinking of Andrew. He's running two conferences right now. He's in the middle of a second one this weekend. I'm thinking of Matthew, who's still doing all of our great editing. I'm thinking of our volunteers and James. We are just so thankful for you who is partnering with us, listening, paying attention. Praise the Lord, you're paying attention. And so, James, thanks for all your hard work. And everybody, we say to you, Godspeed on all these endeavors.